Okay, thanks very much. I first of all would like to thank the organizers for letting me speak here, and I also would like to thank IPAM. This is a joint project with Kerry Salafia, and it started during last year's program on random shapes. Here at IPAM, Kerry was telling us about placentas, and one thing led to another, and so IPAM was really instrumental in bringing this project about. Okay, another thing that I have to tell you before I start, I just have to give you a fair warning that I'm mostly ignorant of all things medical, and whatever little knowledge of placentas I have comes from Kerry, and she's not here today, unfortunately, to correct my mistakes. So when, you know, when I say things, you should be, well, you've been warned. Okay, so why, what is the motivation? At least as far as I understand it, why actually one wants to study human placenta? It's a point of view which is now fairly commonly accepted in medicine, that many adult health risks have fetal origins or are at least connected to the development of the fetus. Some examples would be the heart disease and, say, diabetes, and in many experiments, people would say, look at correlations between adult health risks and things like the birth weight of the baby. And there is a lot of evidence that in many such cases, there is a correlation. So it would be very beneficial to understand if the fetal development was normal, and it would be beneficial to understand the connection between fetal development and adult health risks. Okay. And now, having said that, placentas naturally enter the stage. During 9 months, fetus eats, excretes waste, gets oxygen, and everything happens through the placenta. And then, once the baby is born, placenta is normally discarded. So it's easy to analyze. It comes out. You can slice it, dice it, do whatever. It's completely non-invasive to the baby. And on the other hand, it's any fetal stresses, any abnormalities in the fetal development, what have you, should be reflected in the placenta. So the baby sort of, at least in my limited understanding, comes out equipped with, you know, a crystal ball to look into the future health risks. And analyzing placentas, therefore, could be very beneficial. Okay. Now, I'm going to ease you into seeing pictures of placentas. I remember how difficult it was for me to adjust to them, and by now I'm completely desensitized. So the first few images I'm going to show you are going to be grayscale, and then we'll go to vivid color. Okay, so here is a normally developed human placenta. This is a frontal view. Okay, the shape is generally round, round to oval. The big, this big area in the center is, the insertion of the umbilical cord, and it should be, normally you would expect to see it roughly in the middle. So this is sort of the typical frontal view. If you look at it sideways, it's more or less a pancake. Again, if all things being normal, it's fairly uniformly thick. And inside the uterus, it has a hemispherical shape. So when it comes out, it flattens. So this is the normal, what the normal placenta looks like. Now, if you want to analyze its structure, then, generally speaking, it's one big circulatory system, one big tree, one big vascular tree, which grows grows from the insertion point of the umbilical cord. If you, so here's a picture of, this is an x-ray of a placenta injected with radioactive dye. And you see that this is one big vascular tree which fills out this circular shape. Again, it's a three-dimensional shape, but it's, it's a two-dimensional picture, so you see, say, this vessel seems to be a little sideways and so on, but anyhow, it's a tree, it's a vascular tree which grows from the root, which is the insertion of the umbilical cord. And, of course, you all know better than I do, is that such things are very difficult to analyze. You want to analyze the structure of this, well, this vascular tree is hard. So we can set ourselves a more modest goal, since this is hard to study. We can try to classify the shapes. And this is the first most natural thing to look at, and people have looked at it. So you can try to classify, you can placenta comes out, you can try to see if it has a normal, or well, perhaps I should use a less judgmental term, if it has a typical shape. So typical shape, again, being these previous two pictures, round oval with the umbilical cord in the middle. And there's, well, anyhow, so Carey was showing this pictures of non-typical placentas in one of her talks here at IPAM, and you can get all sorts of weird shapes, of course. 70 to 75% of cases would be typical, would have round shape, central or close to central insertion point for the umbilical cord. What is striking is that many of the non-typical shapes, sort of irregular shapes, look strikingly regular. Okay, here. About 5% look like stars. I mean, this does look like a star. About 5% would have rather symmetric star-like forms. Say on average, between 5 and 7 arms to a star like this. About another 5% would have several large lobes. Okay, in this picture there are three lobes. This thing here is just a tear. That this is supposed to be rounded. Well, it tore when it came out. Remember, in the beginning it was hemispherical. These are three well-defined large lobes, and normally you get 2 to 3 large lobes with the insertion point of the umbilical cord roughly in the middle. Okay, so quite a few irregularly shaped placentas seem to have very regular non-round shapes. So this leads to an idea that there must be some sort of a universal mechanism for the formation of the shapes, right, which is responsible for their appearance. Okay. Yes, so I told you I would ease you into this, but now is the time to face the color picture. So placentas, maybe I should have given you a warning before showing the slide. Sorry. Just a few typical samples. So the first column is normal. In the middle, you see stars. Okay. On the right, you see multilobate or whatever placentas with several large lobes, typically 2 to 3. So 3, and they say this has 2, this has 2, and this, well, you can speculate whether it's 2 or 3. My money is on 3. Alright, so let me give you an idea in which we came up with to describe this in a nutshell. Here's the idea. Look, let's imagine that we have a two-dimensional picture umbilical cord in the middle and filled out by a vascular tree drawn from the center. So you have some growth process and you have a bunch of branches. So there are large branches, then medium-sized branches, and then you get smaller branches and so on. And you know, all very familiar pictures, and then it would fill out a shape which is essentially round. Now imagine that this branching growth is disturbed at some moment of time. So this grows dynamically, right? It starts out small and grows, I mean, starts out just being this point and ends up being this pancake. So imagine you disturb it early in the game when the largest branches are formed. And while they form normally, you decrease the length of the branches of the next level. If you like to make it more hairy, you increase the branching after the large branches have formed. What will you see? Well, it's fairly clear what would happen. The big branches grow about the right size. The mid-sized branches are too short. The thing still fills out a shape, but the shape would be more like this. Now, if the same disturbance comes later in the game, when the mid-sized branches have grown, well, but now the next level branches are too short. So what you would see is a star. Okay, that's the idea which we would, which we'll try to use to describe what happens here. Okay. All right. So what do we need? We need. Okay. Blah blah blah. This is just words describing what I said. Okay. We need the dynamical model of growth for this. We need the dynamical model of growth for this three-dimensional vascular tree. And next I'll tell you what dynamical model of growth we developed for the placental vasculature.
Excuse me, can I have a quick question?
Yes.
So these large changes that you're describing there, is that something you can see from the placenta as a validation? Because it looked like you could see vessels in those color images that you showed us.
So okay, the validation comes next. So let me first describe the model and explain how. But here is a quick answer. Again, the reason we want to look at the shape first is because it's very hard to trace the vasculature. Plus, you need something, and when a baby comes out, if the placenta is really very badly deformed and the baby survives, then you can imagine taking it to a lab and slicing it and trying to map out the vasculature. But you want some other thing. You want to measure something which is easier. Okay? And we'll get to that. But first, let me describe the model. So we need the dynamical model of growth for the vascular tree. And once I show you the title of the next slide, physicists and the audience will know what we do. So what I'm going to describe next is how we model angiogenesis using a fairly simple-minded model, which is nevertheless extremely interesting. It's not easy to study mathematically or even physically. It's very well known to physicists under the name of DLA. Okay, so here's a motivating question. So here's this tree, which is supposed to grow dynamically at the tips. Usual angiogenesis, it will sprout new vessels and will grow at the tips. If you want to model it, if I give you a tree, how do you actually identify the tips? I mean, where is it going to grow next? Well, it's a simple question. If the tree has 10 branches, if your tree has 10,000 branches, then discovering which of them actually would sprout further growth is not immediate from looking at the picture. Fortunately, there is a well-known way to automate this, And it's the following. You release a cloud of diffusion particles. If you think of, you know, the tree analogy, you actually have a tree in the garden. You release at some distance to the tree a cloud of blind flies, which would fly randomly through space, and some of them would land on your tree. The points where they land are the tips. So if you look at little two-dimensional simulation, here, we took a tree, well, a caricature of a tree, a bunch of dots indicating where your flies are going to land. The flies are pretty large, so they don't necessarily land exactly at the tips, but you clearly see that they favor the tips. Okay. So this idea leads to the full-on description of the growth. You start out with a tree, which has grown up to some point. At some distance, a very large distance to this tree, you release a blind fly. It's going to do a random walk in three dimensions. So it's going to make small steps, well, and all. All of the three spatial directions, and if it if it flies away so deep, but if it happens to land on the tree, we'll mark the point of the first contact with the tree, and we'll say, okay, this is a tip where the growth will happen next. Okay. In physics, such a growth is known as DLA, diffusion limited aggregation, and it was introduced in a completely unrelated context in by Witten and Sander in a paper in 1981. And it's been a fascinating subject of study on its own right for mathematicians as well as physicists. And there's a lot of things that are not known about it, probably more things that are not known about it than there are known about it. But nevertheless, it can be seen as a universal model of growth at the tips, which is what we need. So we'll base our model of placental growth on this process. A little summary. At the moment of time n, we have a cluster of n units of growth, which are just some small, let's say, round balls, doesn't matter, which are somehow clustered in a tree. And then we ask ourselves, where should we attach the next unit? We release a random walker far from the cluster, mark the first point of contact with the cluster, and grow the cluster by one unit at that point. Okay, in two dimensions, all random walkers would actually find the cluster. In 3D, you have to keep track, and then you have to make sure that it doesn't travel too far from the cluster, otherwise you throw it away. There is a physics interpretation for this, well, a mathematical interpretation for this, which is if your cluster is a charged conductor, then the probability that the new growth, what happens in some part of the cluster, is the same as the total charge in that part. In mathematics, it's known as the harmonic measure. Oops, why are we not? Oh, IJ. Let's try it again. Hello? Okay, let's try this again. What's happening?
It makes it automatically think the words.
Huh? Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So do you know what's happening?
Are you trying to show a movie?
Yes.
You may have to go out of the software.
Really? So this system cannot show and move it? Oh, that's too bad.
It should be able to, but if you're stuck, sometimes that helps.
Okay, let's try again, and then if I can't, I'll go. Ah, okay, let me go. No, 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 it's stuck. It's supposed to. Supposed to actually show it? Yeah, okay. Little technical difficulty. Okay, let me just show you this movie. If I can find it, here it is. Oh. Okay. Okay, this is the frontal view. Well, I wanted to go with the frontal and the side view next to each other, but I'll just show you the frontal view. Notice that in my description, the branches of the tree are not going to have thickness, but they obviously do in the picture. So what we actually do to simulate a vascular network, at each step when a new particle is added, we recalculate the tree structure, okay, and recalculate the thickness of the vessels according to their position in the tree. So, well, if you... This grows in the hemisphere. Well, I'm not going to show you, that's wasting too much time. I'm not going to show you the side view. I was going to do this simultaneously. Side view would be a growth in the hemisphere, which shows that we place the initial seed, the insertion point of the umbilical cord, somewhere near the uterus, the wall of the uterus, and then the thing just grows and gives you sort of this hemispherical pancake.
So what is your initial starting point?
Okay, the initial starting point. So there is an initial starting cluster, which we choose deterministically.
Already branches or not?
Already branches, and we choose it deterministically. And in fact, you can choose it in... Okay, I'd rather not go into technical details. So we choose it deterministically. This is the initial starting point. And there is...
structure to begin with.
There is structure to begin with, that is correct. You can do it randomly too, but we actually choose it deterministically, and it's also good for consistency, because a way to test this model in particular is to change random number generators. DLA itself is extremely sensitive to the change in random number generators. But that's good. What you want to make sure is that the overall shape of the tree that you get is robust. Whereas the branching would change when we change the generator, and it changed dramatically, the overall shape of the tree, we found it to be extremely robust. But it's also very sensitive to choosing the initial seed. And this is what you don't want to mess with, because this is what you want to fix, at least for these experiments. Okay, so I have to go back. Sorry about the technical difficulty. I have to go back, skipping. Where was that slide? Okay, so it doesn't. I have to close this. I have to start this. Okay, this is what was going to be. Okay, so. Okay. Yes. All right. So we have our model, which seems to be pretty robust. So we now have to see if our conjecture is true. So what happens if we change the branching structure? First of all, how do we change the branching structure? Well, there are several natural ways to do it. The most mathematically meaningful way is to introduce a parameter, which is the probability that a diffusion particle or a blind fly would actually stick to the point of the tree where it lands. What happens? Well, in the original model, it sticks with probability 1. Finds the tree, sticks to it. If you introduce a non-zero probability of not sticking to the tree, what will happen is, well, the fly will encounter the tree somewhere at one of the tips. Well, but some positive probability not stick to it and will drift past it, will keep on random walking, cannot go too far, right? It will still stick. But now it does not necessarily stick at the tip. So the tree grows hairier. The lower the probability, the higher the branch. To be honest, in modeling this, there is a much cheaper way to do this, also much quicker, which is simply change the size of the unit of new growth. It has the exact same effect, and it's much quicker to simulate, because look, here is your, so here is the a branch, right? Your particle was supposed to be attached here. This is made of blocks of the same size. Now, if you attach a block which is much smaller, doesn't look like a tip anymore for this thing, and the branching will still increase. So this is a quicker way to do it. Anyway, so if we, what happens if we do this? If you do this at around 5% of the overall growth, you get this. Okay, you get a multi-lobate picture, typically with three lobes in our models, and I just put an actual three-lobate placenta next to it to compare. If you do this at about 50% of overall growth, when the mid-sized branches have already formed, you get a star-shaped placenta. You can see that there, that the shorter branches have not filled out the space the way they should have, and there are sort of black regions here which have formed these spaces in between the arms of the star. And it's not very easy to see this from here. So here is a comparison of diagrams. This is just the average distance from the insertion point of the umbilical cord to a blood vessel. You take a small sector, calculate the average distance, and then rotate the sector around. And it traces out the shape. And this is round, this is trilobed, and this is a star. Okay. I'm not sure if this is, these are exactly the same as before. Some examples.
What's the new cluster? What's the shape of the cluster that you mentioned?
CN plus one just differs by one unit of growth, right, from CN. So the only difference is, the only difference is one of the tips has grown. The overall shape. These units are tiny. Oh yeah, I should have said that. This here has something 150,000 units of growth. There's a whole different story, which is certainly not, we'll not go into, is to how to simulate this numerically. Three-dimensional DLA growth is extremely difficult to efficiently simulate. There are all sorts of numerical tricks you have to do this quickly. Otherwise, and if you just do this in the straightforward way with the random walkers, the way I described, maybe a couple thousand, maybe 5,000 particles is what you can be, what all you can expect to see realistically. This has 150,000. Okay. All right. Now. Okay. Now. Okay. Good. So now we come to. Okay, so this seems convincing, right? This seems consistent, this seems convincing that these abnormal shapes or atypical shapes come from a disturbance in the branching of the placenta. But how, now I come to the answer to your question, how do we actually check? How do we actually check this, and how do we see what effect this change has on the overall effectiveness of the placenta? Remember, the game is to grow a big and healthy baby. The idea is not to grow a normal placenta. The idea is to grow a normal fetus. Right? So we have to understand two things. First of all, how do we, it would be good to check this model somehow, and secondly, how does this change in branching actually affect the effectiveness? And here comes another idea, which is from a different joint work led by Carey, which is a fetal placenta. fundamental scale and law. You recognize this as a version of Kleiber's law, which, I have it on the slide here, which says that the metabolic rate is body mass to the power 3/4. Well, scales like the body mass to the power 3/4. This was originally postulated by Kleiber in the early 1930s, has been controversial ever since. It seems to be supported by most of the evidence. From naive considerations, you would expect the exponent 2/3 here rather than 3/4. But 3/4 actually seems to be supported by the experiment. But it's not that easy to actually test this, the Kleiber's law, in an experiment. And metabolic rate is not, basal metabolic rate is not that easy to define, but the abstract definition is easy. It's the energy exchange per unit of time at rest. But how do you measure it? And measuring this in the lab is actually fairly difficult. And Kleiber himself, in his original paper based, he collected most of the measurements in existence at that point, and we're talking about tens of examples. Okay, so the idea of replacing the metabolic rate with the placental mass takes care of two things. First of all, whatever energy exchange the fetus does goes through the placenta. You don't have to worry if it's, you know, chemical, whatever. It has to go through the placenta. That's the only conduit for the fetus. Two, it's absolutely no trouble to measure placental mass. So the in this paper, we ran statistical analysis on 26,000 pairs fetus placenta, and you get exponent 0.78 plus minus 0.02. Very conclusive. Okay, so now the next idea: why don't we use the scaling law, which seems to be so conclusive? And this actually tells you how the baby's weight, the normal development, should scale with the weight of the placenta. So why don't we use this as an indicator of the normal development of the fetus and the placenta? So instead of trying to measure the blood vessels, we'll use the deviations from 3/4 to see if, for example, our atypical placentas are less effective than the typical ones. Okay, so what we did, of about 1,000 placentas for which we had the outer perimeter mapped out, we did very basic statistical analysis. So, for example, you can calculate the standard deviation of the radius from the point of the insertion of the umbilical cord and see how that correlates what deviation, so delta beta is the deviations from 3/4, from 0.75. Okay. And you see a strong and significant correlation. Negative, right? So the bigger the deviation in the radius, the worse the exponent, which is bad. As a reality check, here's what happens if you measure this from the geometrical center. Now, the geometrical center, this is the center of mass of the perimeter of the surface of the placenta, has no particular significance for the vascular tree. I mean, you can think of a caricature when you take a perfectly nice and round placenta. This is the insertion point of the umbilical cord. Your tree grows very nicely, and then you have the little bump. This will really mess up the geometrical center. It does nothing to affect the vascular tree. So you don't expect any correlation for the standard deviation from the radius, and you don't get any. Okay. And we did some other tests, various simple-minded geometrical measures, you know, deviation, which measures a deviation from a convex shape and so on. And they all strongly correlate with deviation from 3/4. So there is evidence that atypically shaped placentas are less effective. And now, to tie all of this together, of course, we all know why they exponent, well, or at least many of you know why the exponent is 3/4, or should be 3/4, rather than 2/3. What makes the exponent larger is that the vascular network is to some degree a fractal. And there's been, okay, this already said, there's been a series of works, not universally accepted, but nevertheless strong evidence. For example, there was a series of works by West and others starting in 1997, which relate the exponent 3/4 to the structure of the vascular tree. So we seem to find the confirmation for our hypothesis. Change in branch end leads to change in shape, which leads to change in the effectiveness of the placenta. Okay. Now, what's nice about this model in particular, of course, this is too simplistic. I mean, there is a lot of things which need to be developed further here. This is obviously, at this stage, too simplistic. But nevertheless, what it tells you, what it gives you, is the time in the development of the placenta, which is associated to the change in shape, which is very important because, for example, fetal stresses have very different effects at different times. And I wasn't sure how much time I would have, but it seems that I have another 5 minutes, so I'll tell you about a little case study which we did to test this. Okay, this works. Okay, so here is a little case study. So it's well known that, well, it's easy to see with the DLA model, and it's well known that if you change the initial seed, you can seriously affect the shape. In general, you don't want to mess with the initial seed because that is not a random process. That's some deterministic thing that you want to start growing your vascular tree from. But if your initial seed is slightly spatially elongated, you are going to have very high probability to grow a placenta with two lobes. They could be well separated, like in this picture, and not as well separated, like in this one, but that's what you are going to get if your initial seed is somewhat spatially extended. And of course, and the rest of the growth would happen normally. So let's use this as a test case. So what should this suggest? This should suggest that by lobate placentas, that the centrally inserted umbilical cord have actually grown normally and would give you a normal exponent for the fetal placental scaling ratio. Graphic picture follows next. Be warned. These are some examples of bilobate placentas. It's about, so bilobates in our study is about 1% of all of them. Okay, so for 1,000 you get about 10. So here is 6 representatives. And they range from something like this, which looks reasonably round, central insertion, doesn't look too bad, right? So something like this, where the lobes were so well separated that they actually tore in two pieces when it came out. You know, this is reasonably round. Here you can sort of see the thinning of the tissue between the lobes, and these two look pretty ugly. Okay. Yes?
What about the babies? Were they normal or
So, next slide. Okay, so what we do, we calculate baby birth weight to 3/4 over the placental weight. And it's supposed to be a number which is very close to 1.03. But these placentas were within 10% of the normal. So for all practical purposes, the baby's weight developed normally in all of these cases. Okay.
How about the other attributes of the baby?
We don't know. You can ask Carrie when she's back tomorrow if they have more data. So there's a huge data set for the pairs of weight, placenta and fetus, 26,000. To correlate this with the shape, you need a data set for which the outer perimeter of the surface has been mapped out. So we have maybe 1,000. Okay. So I don't know if there are data sets which can be used, which would look at other attributes of the baby. But the weight of the baby is the most commonly reported attribute at birth, right? No question. I mean, no question. And more studies clearly warn. But this also is very good evidence that these placentas have grown normally. According to the model, you would get this bilobate shape if the growth is completely normal, but the initial seed is somewhat deformed.
Excellent.
Yes.
So your conclusion here that this ratio is in 10% is okay.
Yeah, this is good.
So, but if now you can see the star-like percent, what you get?
In general, the deviation, so you get, when you look at the deviation from 3/4, you get a range which at the lower end is something like 0.65. Carrie would remember this better. So there's a little bit of a problem with doing this with specifically starlight, because you have to collect starlight. Remember, you only have 1,000 mapped out, and it's a little, there's no good measure of what the starlight is, but the deviation of an order of about 20% is to be expected, something like that. So this is good. Okay, and some of them, I'll look at the pictures. I'm not by any strange clinicist, but these don't look good. And then all of these. And they grow normally. Not but normal size baby for this size of the cell. Okay, so here are two references. Preliminary version of the modeling of the variability of shapes with the DLA model is available online and in the archive, and there's also another paper in the pipeline on the allosteric scaling law. Just some comments into where this equivalent should go next. First of all, there is a lot of people who model angiogenesis. In two dimension, modeling of angiogenesis is often done for the growth of tumors, and it's usually unrelated to the business that we do, because instead of a well-formed vascular tree, you get more of a sponge-like structure. So it's usually the model, probabilistic model, the Bayesian percolator. There are also people who model angiogenesis using local models, sort of the growth of individual strands, if you will. So once you identify the tips of the tree, how do you actually grow it from there? And that's, of course, a natural further direction of study, because, well, we have a method for identifying the tips of the tree, but at the moment we're very simple-minded about just the next unit of growth at this point. And of course, you can take into account various chemical and biological factors which go into angiogenesis. The other thing is the connection of all of this with the optimality of the vascular network. Of course, the branching is related to the optimality, and there's lots of models and so on. And this is another thing which we haven't yet developed, and another very natural direction for this all to continue. So this is it. I think my 50 minutes are up. Thank you for listening.